What is up? What is good? How's everybody doing today on this Tuesday? Welcome into Sports 1140 KHDK. Jason Ross here with you. And we are taking you up until Oakland A's baseball. The season winding down. The A's need to get wins, and they need to get some help. They get the Royals coming up at the top of the next hour as the first pitch coming up around 5 o'clock. A's and Royals today in our brief time that we have together. We will not only talk about the A's and Royals, we will talk about last night's thriller with the Raiders starting out 1-0, one of the more bizarre Monday night games you'll ever see. We'll do a deeper dive into that. We'll have the crossover, our daily over-under, as we mentioned, and get you ready for tonight's action. So plenty of things for us to cover. We appreciate everyone checking in on our YouTube page, certainly on our text line. Those of you that are listening over the radio, the traditional way, the old-fashioned way, but maybe on our app or on our stream, smart speakers, however you're taking this in, we do appreciate each and every one of you out there today. Time to see the return of Pro Rodeo to Marysville this Saturday and Sunday. For ticket information, go to MarysvilleStampede.com. All right, let's get into it. Let's start you out with First Things First.
First things first.
Close things first.
Blitz is picked up. Jones is open. Jackpot, baby! Vegas touchdown. This time, no doubt. Put it in the W column, baby. This one's over. And a baby.
Brent Musburger on the call last night from Allegiant Stadium, a game you can hear right here on, and heard right here on KHDK, where you're home of the Raiders. And a thriller. As I wrote on KHDK.com, clearly defined, that was an Al Davis win. Just win, baby. That's what they did. They were a mess at times. They looked good at times. They looked comical at times. It was a little bit of everything. They took advantage of a team that was injured and banged up, but yet were losing 14-0. They had to come back multiple times. They shot themselves in the foot multiple times. But they survived. I thought Derek Carr couldn't have been worse early. He was awful. He was awful in the beginning part of the game. Locked in way too much on Darren Waller. Then you get to winning time, and he leads three come-from-behind drives to tie the game all three times. And then the game winner twice, right? I mean, the end was so bizarre. That was yesterday, you know, talking on the show about the Chargers inventing ways to lose. The Raiders were about to invent a way to lose. That would have been one of the worst losses when you leave the field, leave the sidelines to celebrate. You're basically getting to the time where you're going to exchange jerseys and tell everybody how happy you are. Congrats, good work, good to see you. Good luck the rest of your season. You're celebrating fans, first time at Allegiant Stadium. They were great. The energy was awesome. It's a walk-off win. You couldn't feel any better. Oh, man, down at the one. Okay. Well, quarterback sneak or a couple of quick turn handoffs, you pound this thing in, you get the win. Carr does the sneak. And then for some bizarre reason, they elect to do a hard count. What, to get half the distance to the goal? The ball's at the six-inch line. Yeah, you would have been technically a little bit closer, but your own guys move. Rookie top pick, Alex Leatherwood moved. They have to retreat. You get into a throwing situation. And yeah, you saw it. You knew what happened. Through the hands of Willie Snead. Should have been caught. Off a helmet of the Ravens. High in the air in the center of the field. That's just nightmare written all over it. Touchback. Oh my gosh. I mean, it was just awful. Agonizing. And you could just see John Gruden. You could see how Derek Carr was wearing that. And then the Ravens got the ball back. Credit to the Raiders defense, which as the game went on, they got better. They kept Lamar Jackson in the pocket enough, got the strip sack, got the ball back. Then you're going, okay, you got it. Going to go win the game. Can't find your kicker. You get to delay a game. And then the way the last play went that you just heard there called from Compass Radio Network and Brent Musburger, Lincoln Kennedy, it looked like, you know, live when the visuals that we all get on television, kind of a 3 to 5 step drop, back foot throw. What is Carr doing? Well, he was putting enough air into the ball because they had a wide-open touchdown to Zay Jones. And, yes, there's your walk-off win for the Raiders. Oh, my goodness. Just win, baby, right? That's what they did. They stayed with the division. They had to get the win, and they got the win, and it was bizarre. Bizarre. But, again, the most important thing, It's did you get the win or the loss? At the end of the year, you count them all up. And 1-0 start, sticking with the division. Lots of areas to get better. Like to see more balanced attack between the run and the pass game. It was nice to see that Jacobs did play. We told you before the game yesterday he had been upgraded but wasn't sure how much he would run. He ran okay. I mean, he did have two touchdowns. One was the real short one, but he 10 of 34. And for the longest part of the game, I thought, is the best play going to be that gadget play early with Mariota? About a 25 to 30-yard run. But settled in. Carr got better as the game went on. The team got better as the game went on and still made all those mistakes. But a 33-27 overtime win for the Raiders. Again, much more on that. A deeper dive coming up at the bottom of the hour. But, oh, wow. Part of a wild week one in the National Football League.
First things first.
All right, next up here, 49ers news.
And now it's a kills. Garoppolo flipping the run play here. The lone back is Elijah Mitchell. Toss right side behind the tight end. Flags are down. Mitchell into the secondary. Breaks a tackle. Touchdown! San Francisco!
Greg Papa there from the 49ers Radio Network. Remember, you can check out Greg Papa each and every week on the Carmichael Dave Show, Fridays at 8:05. The reason we played Elijah Mitchell's touchdown run, because he had a great game. 19 carries, one of the few running backs in the NFL that went over 100 yards in week one. 104 to be exact with a touchdown, that 38-yard run. Told you yesterday the injury to Raheem Mostert was going to be put on the inactive list and missing 8 weeks. Update on that. Today, the news, Raheem Mostert announced that he's undergoing season-ending knee surgery. His camp, his doctors, team doctors, felt it would be of best interest for him to get back 100% to undergo surgery. So he's going to have that. His season is over after just 2 carries for 20 yards. He's such an explosive runner, but he's now injured. The Niners have 2 prominent injuries to start after week one. And today, the 49ers did sign Kerryon Johnson to the practice squad, but it's going to be Elijah Mitchell, you'll see Hasty. I think we'll now see Trey Sermon, who was a healthy scratch in week one. I said it yesterday, I'll say it again. The 49ers have Super Bowl caliber talent. They do. Got to stay healthy. Last year, most teams that had the amount of injuries that the Niners had last year would not have won 6 games. They wouldn't. The Niners weren't a joke last year because they had enough talent. Now, they lost way too many high-profile people, and the quarterback position was one of them. When you don't have a strong enough QB, it's tough to win in the league, and you lose Bosa. I mean, again, the back half of the defense was just gutted, and it was too much. Detroit put a scare in them. Niners got the win. They got to keep staying healthy. And so tough news for them today. Certainly you feel mostly for Raheem Mostert. Talked to you about Jason, yesterday, the defensive back, the situation with Jason Verrett, and it's just a frustrating start for the 49ers, but a reality of the sport, more injuries, and that one certainly is going to be an interesting spot, how San Francisco handles just that overall depth going forward.
First things first.
First things first.
There he goes. The pitch is blasted to deep right field. This one is way gone. Up over the arcade, Brandon Belt, a booming home run, is 24th of the year. 8-1 Giants.
First team in. They've clinched. We told you the magic number was 1 yesterday. That was from the Giants Radio Network. Dave Fleming on the call. And yes, the Giants have clinched a spot in the postseason. Their division is not won yet. They will at worst be in the wild card, but they have made the playoffs. Baseball's first team to do it. Belt, part of 4 home runs the Giants hit yesterday, and the dream season continues. Now 94-50 after the win yesterday. 8 consecutive victories. They get the Padres next. Dodgers have won 4 in a row, still just 2.5 back of the Giants. So it's going to force the Giants to continue to play all the way through the tape, all the way through the end, in the last couple of weeks to go. Because the last thing they want to do is possibly set a record for the most wins in franchise history and be in the wild card. They just can't have that. They're 94-50, Dodgers 92-53. Giants get the Padres again today. And it's just an amazing story. I feel like we've done this by the month. Oh, man, the Giants are the first team to 60 wins. Oh, wait till after the All-Star break. Here they are at 70 wins, 80 wins, 90 wins. Likely they'll be the first team to 100. They're the first team in baseball's postseason. and just a completely surprising season from where we were at the beginning. But watching them on a day-to-day basis, they deserve every bit of this. They've been so good, so consistent. The balance in the lineup, the quality pitching, the bullpen has done its job. Defense is strong. They have multiple ways to beat you, certainly with the home runs like yesterday. They'll play small ball at times. They're having guys having career years. It's what you want. It's how you win a World Series. It's how you do it. They did it differently when they won the three before, where they kind of got in, played their best at the end of the year, and had some incredible pitching in the postseason. They've got balance. They've got depth. And every time the questions have been brought up as, oh, but wait for this series. Oh, Brewers got them a couple times. See, that's a team they might play in the playoffs. Maybe they're not ready for it. Then here they go, ripping off eight wins. Oh, it's a big series with the Dodgers. Take enough to keep them behind you. Oh, but now it's the Padres. They beat them. It's just they've checked all the boxes, and they're going to do that for the regular season. They'll have to check the next couple of biggest ones when the postseason gets here. And for them, they better hope it says a division winner, and everything would have to go through them on the home field, and that gives them their best possible chance to be the last one standing and holding up a trophy. But the season truly has been amazing, what they've done, and a ton of credit to the Giants front office, to everybody involved in that organization, as the win streak now hits eight, and they have clinched that postseason.
First things first.
First things first.
Here's the pitch. It's on the way. And Josh, a line smash, base hit to left. That'll score two, and the A's take a 10-4 lead.
Well, the A's, Ken Korak there, have had an up-and-down season, to say the least. And as we approach the last precious few games, the A's begin a series in just a little bit against Kansas City, a Royals team that is below 500, not a great baseball team. But the A's can't look at it that way. They played Texas here and have not done well at all this whole season collectively against Texas, who has even a worse record than Kansas City. So here's what it's looking like for the A's right now. They are, well, technically still in the division race. I think that one's dead, right? Seven back. They have enough games with the Astros and Mariners to make a difference there. Let's not get too greedy there for the A's. Got to worry about getting in first. And the path there is the wild card. The way the wild card is set up for them, they are the last of really the five teams that have a shot for two spots. You got the Blue Jays, who are the hottest team amongst that group. The Yankees and Red Sox have been floundering for a while. Seattle has continued to be a surprise and has found a rebirth here the last month. And then it's the A's. So the A's are 2.5 back. Seattle's 2 back. It's basically a virtual three-way tie with the Red Sox, Yankees, and Jays. Percentage points separate them for the two spots. It's doable, and we've said this for a while for the A's. Every time they have these killer bullpen losses, it feels like, ah, that's the one. Let's bury them. They're done. They're out. They've had five or so in the last couple of weeks, yet here it is. It's still a chance. Got to be great against Kansas City. Got to win the series immediately following that against the Angels. And then it ends with the last four series with Seattle, Houston, Seattle, Houston. It can be done. They have to find that stretch like they did early in the season where they were playing great baseball. I think it was July as well where they had one of the best months. August, they did not. September's been eh. And Chris Bassitt still sounds like he might come back. He will certainly help. But he's going to pitch maybe, if they're lucky, two, maybe three games. Maybe. Got to keep it going. Got to keep the pressure on. Try to just keep leapfrogging teams. That's the problem. The deficit's not that much, 2.5. It's the fact that there's five teams. And so you need a couple of teams. They need help. They need some people helping out the A's. You want to be in a spot like the Giants where you control things more. The A's certainly don't. This is a spot they didn't want to be in, but it's a spot that they are in right now. And they're hoping to change the course of that. But the A's begin their series with the Royals, 2.5 back of the wild card again as five teams battle for those final two spots.
First things first.
First things first.
All right, more first things first. This is one when I saw it today as breaking news. I thought it was dated breaking news. I said, didn't Ryan Braun already retire? He played last year, hasn't played this year, but he officially announced that he has retired from the sport. And he leaves as the Milwaukee Brewers' all-time home run leader. He did formally announce his retirement at the age of 37. Had a really nice career. Of course, has some marks against him. The 2010-11, I think, NL MVP. And I like when guys have one spot in their career. It was Milwaukee. That's where he played. Here's his quote. I've weighed the decision for many months. While I still love this game very much, the time is right for me to retire from my playing days. It's difficult to describe my emotions today, but it starts with overwhelming gratitude for those who have shared this experience with me while offering their unconditional support at every turn. I'll forever appreciate the best fans in the game and the countless people who came out to the ballpark on a night-to-night basis and making Milwaukee the greatest city to play the game. So he leaves with 352 home runs and officially announced his retirement from baseball earlier today.
I think I know why you thought he was retired earlier.
Why is that?
Apparently there was a mix-up with a FedEx delivery, and that caused him problems. And
I've heard that story before with Ryan Braun. Yeah, so he's done. Age of 37. Really nice career. Very productive career. Like I said, 352 home runs, ton of RBI, extra base hits, all those kind of things, and it has an MVP on his resume. So congratulations to Ryan Braun, who does officially announce his retirement from the game earlier today.
First things first.
First things first.
Just holding it near midcourt. Creeps forward on the left side, moves to the middle of the floor. Shot clock at 5. Now a defensive switch picked up by Hield. Takes Hield into the post, turns, scores. You might as well turn out the lights. It's all but over. 4:15, however, is still plenty of time, but the Kings just can't do anything right. It seems like they've only scored 2 points in over 7 minutes.
Yikes. Well, that was the G-Man in the game earlier this year, but the highlight there was John Wall. And why John Wall is ending up on First Things First is today it's coming out publicly that the Rockets and John Wall are actively looking and working on a trade. Okay, so this one is interesting on multiple levels. John Wall, still a talented player, and I will say early on in the season last year when the Kings did play the Rockets, it was John Wall coming back. He just looked like he had his burst, looked like he had that same quickness. I was actually very impressed early on in the season with John Wall. Looked like as the season went along and the Rockets completely changed course, right? They move on from James Harden. They moved on from, who was in that one deal? Victor Oladipo. They moved on from DeMarcus Cousins. Christian Wood got hurt. Eric Gordon got hurt. They started to shut down John Wall some, and then they ended up having the worst record in basketball and drafting Jalen Green. They like Kevin Porter. They like Jalen Green. They're going to try to build around those two. No problem with that at all if I'm the Houston Rockets. Where it's going to become tricky for the Houston Rockets and John Wall is this alleged deal. I think my opinion is that they have made this public because they need every team to know this. I think you don't have to make this a public thing. You could be calling teams. But sometimes when you put that out there, maybe you get everybody intrigued or people doing their due diligence and saying, okay, what would John Wall look like on our roster? And the elephant in the room is the contract. How on earth are they going to deal this? Now, here's how it can be done. John Wall is set to make $91.7 million over the next 2 years. If Houston is truly going to go into this tear-down rebuild, which it certainly seems like that's the direction they're going, they won the fewest amount of games last year, their biggest asset that they have will be their draft picks. It's not John Wall. John Wall can still play. That contract's a killer, an absolute killer to move. So you've got to give a sweetener. And to me, any team would go, okay, John Wall, we would play him, we would start him, we would utilize him. We're going to pay him a ton of money. We're going to have to give up a lot in return. Likely what we'd like to give up in return is a contract that we don't like. But I certainly want that lottery pick that's most likely coming from the Houston Rockets, if not two. And so Houston, to truly, if they're just going to give away John Wall and say we're rebooting, you're going to have to throw in the sweeteners, as I say, the draft picks, because most likely that's going to be the lottery. And if it's not, good for you, Houston, because your young guys are playing better than a lot of people. You know, it usually takes time. And I think that's the way you do it. You got to find a team that thinks maybe they're a talented point guard away, a veteran, proven player, all-star, former all-star in this league, from putting them over the top. Maybe you swap a bad contract and give them some of those future picks. I think that's the only way this happens. I think that's why they also went out and made it public. But John Wall, yes, he can still play. It's the price tag. If you look at the league, there's only two players currently under contract that make more money than John Wall per season. And when I tell you the players, you go, well, that makes sense. They're great. They're talented. Former MVPs. The two players, salary-wise, are Steph Curry and James Harden. That's it. Steph Curry's number one in the league in salary. James Harden's number two. And I've seen people say, well, there's just going to be a buyout ultimately. Now, they want to trade him. They want to get something back. They want to, now, at $44 million this year, player option next year at $47 million. He's not turning down that option. So what are the teams that can do it? I was trying to find a couple of candidates, and the one that jumped out at me is a team that's had a rebirth last year, probably would welcome a player like this with open arms, but I just couldn't find a way to make the deal happen. And the team I was thinking of was the New York Knicks, who's good, not good enough. John Wall would help them. Their biggest contract is Julius Randle. I don't think they want to move him. There's other pieces that they ultimately could move, but it's probably not enough to pry just because, I mean, the biggest contract they signed this offseason was Evan Fournier. Is that what Houston wants? Houston's probably looking for something dynamic in return. This is the point. It would be tricky. Immediately I went to the Kings. Okay, could the Kings take John Wall? Sure, another guard. It's a position of strength for the team. I don't think it would help the Kings. And I know I constantly say, hey, more talent helps you, but I think it would break up the roster entirely too much, and it's not a direction they're going. I don't think they would have interest. I don't think they should have interest. And it's really going to be interesting to see what Houston and John Wall, where they are. And that's the thing with these contracts. If I'm the player and the Players Association, you always tell the player to go get your money. Go get paid. Go get that big contract. You should. And for the most part, you can always move them or have a chance to move them. Here's a player that had come off of injury that you know the Rockets want to trade him. You probably want to try to get something else from them. You're probably trying to ditch something you don't like contract-wise. All of this doesn't sound that appealing to me if I'm the Houston Rockets. It might for the opposing team. And then when you're looking at, okay, contract for contract, well, Steph Curry's not going to get traded for John Wall or Russell Westbrook or Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, those kind of guys. It's not happening. It's not happening. So it will be interesting to see how that ultimately goes. But John Wall and the Rockets working on a trade, he is due $91.7 million over the next two seasons. Just such a crazy figure. And even hearing G-Man there gets me fired up because we're really not that far away from the start of the NBA season. Preseason's just a few weeks away. And the NBA season starts in just over a month for the regular season. One other note, too, by the way, from the NBA. I mentioned Eric Gordon earlier from the Rockets. Well, how about Aaron Gordon from the Nuggets? Denver and the Nuggets agree to a four-year extension with Aaron Gordon. Looks like that's going to be valued around $90 million. I think it was $92 million. So these guys are going to continue to get paid. Denver's going to continue to try to be one of those teams that makes that next jump. A couple years ago in the Western Conference Finals, they've got an MVP, they've got a talented coach, they've got a good roster, Porter needs to get better, Murray stays healthy, and today they look to lock in Aaron Gordon as part of their future. Again, a four-year extension worth $92 million. All right, still to come, we're going to talk about the Raiders in their season opener yesterday. We also want to tell you that Capital Casino is now open again with our outdoor gaming venue at 411 North 16th Street in Sacramento. It was quite a week one for the underdogs. We'll explain that story. And truly, what did the Raiders 1-0 start mean? Does it mean we should be high on this team going forward, or do they just kind of get through and find a way to win? We'll discuss that when we come back here on Sports 1140 KHTK.
Blitz is picked up. Jones is open. Jackpot, baby! Vegas touchdown. This time, no doubt. Put it in the W column, baby. This one's over. And a baby.
Zay Jones, since he got to our team, every time I ask him when to throw, he's there at 6 a.m. Every time. He's never missed one. So to see him come up with a game winner like that, I hope everyone in the world roots for Zay Jones because he works harder than anybody on our team.
Trying to sneak in the back door. Mess around and get trapped in the black hole.
Well done. Well done there, Chris. And well done, Derek Carr. Well done, Raiders. I'd want to play with Derek Carr as a teammate. I would. I mean, he He was great in the post-game interview. It was a journey to get there, as we mentioned earlier, and it was a wild weekend of the National Football League. In fact, yesterday's win by the Raiders helped set a record. 12 NFL underdogs covered in week one. 9 won the game outright, just won the game completely. The last time this happened was in 1983 when underdogs had a winning record for the week. So, one, it's the week one, right? So maybe the point spreads and teams are off. We don't know. Maybe some teams are better than others. By and large, I think the Ravens are better than the Raiders. The Ravens were banged up. They were injured. Raiders got injured during the game, lost a couple of different linemen. But all things being equal, the Ravens have been consistently the much better team than the Raiders. Raiders playing at home in front of that crowd, which there was a really good festive atmosphere. And it was just cool to see. And it looked like the Raiders ate that up. And after just sleepwalking through the game, then they got going. I thought Carr, again, I want to say he was 2 of 10 for something like 9 yards after one quarter. Just awful. Targeted Waller way too much. And granted, he's their guy. He's their best player. But you got to spread it around. They started looking better when Renfro, and they started to run a little bit, and they got Edwards going specifically late. Drake caught 5 or 6 passes, Kenyon Drake. So, again, for the Raiders, they needed to find a way to win. They got the job done. They did win. I will say this, too, as far as, I mean, there's plenty of things that they did wrong in the game, besides the end that we talked about earlier. One of the things that was really good, their special teams punting early, just flipping field position. And then, yes, there was the gaffe in which Daniel Carlson wasn't ready in overtime, whatever happened there. And it was kind of a surprise kick on second down. Kicker's late getting out, so you have to take a delay game. So then the offense has to come back out. But he did also do this to make sure they got there.
Good hold. Kick on its way. Yes, baby, we're tied. 2 seconds left on the clock.
I mean, that was 55 yards out. And he got it. He nailed a couple during the game. So the kicking game was strong. They did get better as the game went along. And just hearing Coach Gruden basically talk about things after the game. Here was John Gruden afterwards.
Coach, in your career, have you ever been involved in a game like this before where it almost appeared like you had to win the game twice? Can you recall anything like this in your career?
I died and woke up and died again, and I was like a cat. I had multiple lives tonight. I don't like playing like that. It was tough, but again, we did a lot of really good things to win that football game tonight.
They did, and they did it as it progressed. And I think Carr even said that in his post-game interview. He said that's a difficult defense to handle. They bring so much pressure, so many different reads, so many different angles. And you could just see that they were figuring it out. I mean, the Raiders struggled to get 10 points early. And then no score in the third. And in the fourth quarter, winning time, 3 different times, Derek Carr led the Raiders down for game-tying drives. They needed a field goal we just played that you heard to tie it. Touchdowns before after getting down again to tie it twice. And then, yeah, in overtime, it felt like they won the game twice. But the most important thing is they did win. Carr had 56 pass attempts, threw for 453, did have a pick, the one that, you know, was just numbing the way that one happened. A couple of touchdowns, didn't get his touchdowns till late. I'd like to see the balance a little better. The Raiders ran the ball 21 times, threw it 56. Part of that is a product of the game. But it also lends right into what the Ravens do well. I thought their downfield coverage was good most of the game, but then as it went along, the Raiders started to find lanes and different things. The pass rush was bringing heat, bringing pressure. Carr got sacked 3 or 4 times. I thought the line got off to a slow start. They were out of rhythm at times. So there are areas of growth that is needed, but I think the thing we had said coming into the game was the Raiders' defense. That was the biggest issue really the last couple of years. And for the most part, I thought they did a pretty good job on Lamar Jackson, for the most part. And much like the offense, the defense got better as the game went along. And I know when they threw the pick in overtime and Lamar Jackson got the ball back, I said, this is going to be an awful loss for the Raiders. He's going to go lead them down. They've got a great kicker in Tucker. That's all they need. This one's over. This is going to be an awful, awful loss. And they get the sack. They get the turnover. They recover it. They're in field goal range. They ultimately have to throw the game-winning touchdown. And really nicely done there by the Raiders.
Talking about crazy stats, do you want to hear what Derek Carr's line was in overtime?
Oh, yeah, I didn't see that.
4 of 7 for 101 yards and one touchdown.
In OT, because actually the best part, we all think about the very end of the game, but Chris, they won the toss, so that's you're going to want the football. You want to go down and get, where to get the ball and score. Okay, you got to get that first down, that first one, and that second one. And then they already, like, getting a couple flipped the field position. So I said, at least they're out of harm's way. And now, oh, wait, are they going to go down? They're going to go down and win this. Then they had the pass that they, I mean, they stormed the field, and they think they won, and then the review, and you went, oh, that's painful. But it's going to take one play, maybe two, to win.
Yeah.
Oh, just a bizarre, bizarre finish. Again, that's why the NFL is so great.
Jacobs looked like he couldn't go that last part of the game.
Yeah, he was getting worn out. I mean,
so I would say that that was one of the worrying part, because at that point, you just give it to him four times, right?
You would think.
Think about it.
Yeah. Well, and the first keeper was fine, because I think you can, I know they hard counted later, but that's where you could even kind of look around and just do a quick snap and go. Or one of my favorite plays always for quarterbacks is what Drew Brees would do, is jump. Just put the ball over, and they could punch it out as long as it broke the plane. It doesn't matter. But he kind of just went into the pile, and there was no forward surge. So then they hard count. I don't know why they did that, and they fooled themselves. It was just a crazy, crazy game.
That seems like one of those Buffalo Wild Wing commercials.
Yes.
Where you want it to keep going.
Oh, my goodness. They tricked themselves. Here's John Gruden. More from him on that final play.
I don't want to get into all the specifics, but we knew they were going to all-out blitz. That's their history. That's what they do. You can forget about the throw and the catch. It's the protection. It was a great pickup by our guys, and Derek threw the ball retreating. It was just a heck of a play against an all-out blitz with the game on the line. But we had run a version of that play earlier, yes.
Yeah, and then Zay Jones, of course, brings it in. Carr giving him a lot of praise, as you heard. This is another one that came out from the post game that I thought deserves a little bit more discussion coming from Coach John Gruden.
I thought he mishandled a ball or two, uncharacteristically. He had a penalty called back, a big catch and run. He's the best player I've ever coached, so I'm going to continue to look for him. And sorry about that, Vic, but you know, he's a hell of a player. He deserves some good looks.
He was talking about Darren Waller, the best player I've ever coached. We all are guilty of being prisoner of the moment, and Darren Waller's terrific. The best player he's ever coached? Seems a bit much. Seems a bit much right now. He's gifted. He's listed as a tight end. They really use him as a receiver. 19 targets yesterday. 10 catches, 105 yards, and a score. He did make some mistakes as well. Had a couple that hit his hands. Carr was off early on looking for him. Missed him on the – I know they had that one seam route that they showed multiple times that he's just waving wide open down the middle of the field, and Carr missed him. But the best player he's ever coached. Wow. He's a great story. I loved the story, especially when the Raiders were featured on Hard Knocks and you just learned about his background. I guess I'll give him a little more time before I think Gruden would say that. But, Chris, that was a little surprising to me when all the people he's had, certainly in the Raiders the first time and in his Super Bowl time with Tampa Bay.
Jerry Rice played for John Gruden, didn't he?
He did, and that was at the back end of his career. But still, he had great numbers as a Raider. Tim Brown, who's in the Hall of Fame. Warren Sapp.
What would actually be fun is if we could go down the list of the players he said is the greatest.
I know, at some point. Yes. So it felt like a prisoner of the moment comment for sure. Darren Waller is awesome. The Raiders now go to Pittsburgh to take on the Steelers, who had, again, talking about upsets and quality wins. They went into Buffalo and got a great win. So this will be another big time challenge for the Silver and Black. But, I think it's much like we discussed the Niner game yesterday. You just have to find ways to win. The Niners were the better team against the Lions. They played like it, but they nearly gave that game up. I think playing this game multiple times with a healthy Ravens team, I think they beat the Raiders. But yesterday was different. I think a lot of the circumstances to me pointed towards the Raiders. That's why I picked the Raiders yesterday. I thought the home stadium would have a bigger impact, specifically early. Just the energy, the feel, the buzz. And at times, I watched the game and also heard it on the radio here on KHDK. There was a couple times when Brent Musburger and Lincoln Kennedy were describing plays, and you hear crowd noise, and I thought it was, oh, that's a big catch for the Raiders, and it was incomplete. And I'm like, oh, there are Raven fans there. They're just fans making noise. But it was by far louder when the Raiders had things going positively for them. So I thought that would have a bigger impact early. It didn't. It did late. And the Raiders clean things up, and maybe they'll have a better thing going. But, man, 33-27, one of the more bizarre games that we saw this weekend. All right, when we come back, we will have a final segment. Again, we're getting you closer to baseball coverage. It's the A's and the Royals still to get to, our daily over-under. We've got the crossover and another part of last night that I thought was truly great, Peyton and Eli's broadcast. That was fabulous. We'll discuss that when we come back here on KHDK. All right, back here on Sports 1140 KHDK, A's baseball coming up in about 15 minutes or so that we'll get to that. It's A's and Royals. Again, the A's begin the day 2.5 back of the wild card. Five teams battling for two spots as the A's have, what, six series to go. Royals, Angels, two with Seattle, and two series with the Mariners. So a couple other things before we get to the crossover and daily over-under. I don't know if anybody had seen this, but probably a lot of you have. Certainly those of you that follow social media and get on Twitter and different things. Today, 61 years of age, Norm MacDonald passed away. And Norm was one of the most unique comedians I think I've ever seen. A lot of the stuff that was being posted about him today, he thrived on going after uncomfortable topics, yet trying to make them funny, and I think for the most part he did. I mean, it's borderline cringeworthy, but he's funny, and a lot of it's about his delivery. And I would say, in true homage to him, that he lost his battle with cancer. But if you follow Norm and you know he's got even a bit on that, one of the Chris to me as lifetime watcher of Saturday Night Live. That cringeworthy was his stuff with OJ, which was so not even on the line, over the line, but also funny. I mean, it just, that to me was when he beyond pushed the envelope.
And I think he was my favorite Weekend Update.
Yeah.
I wasn't really watching when 80s, early yeah. 90s or that. So he was like the first Weekend Update guy I remember. But he was always the best at it.
So dry and not afraid to go there, and whatever that means to you.
He also, but like not afraid to go there, but he also had this way of playing on, like turning it on his head.
Yes.
So I was telling.
Not predictable.
Yeah. I was telling you earlier about the Bob Saget roast, and everyone's just going hard at him and just like thinking of like the dirtiest, craziest things they could say about him. And then he gets up there and he starts reading off these cue cards, not these cue cards, but these like cards of just these 50s, just bad roasts. I think, of course, Leachman, you don't, you're an older woman, but you're not over the hill. In fact, your car can't even get up the hill.
Right.
To where his delivery makes dumb, stupid joke yeah. hilarious. There's also, and him on Conan was the best every time. He would have like a 10-minute joke about a moth at a psychiatrist's office,
but still classic.
And it was the best. And you like, where is this going?
Right.
And it didn't. What made it funny was getting there, and the punchline didn't matter.
It was a good payoff, but it was the journey.
Yeah,
it was the journey. And so, and to his credit too, I guess a lot of people in the comedy world didn't know that he had cancer. It was 9 years that he was going through that. So unfortunately, gone too soon at the age of 61. So, rest in peace, Norm MacDonald, that's for sure. Yesterday, we mentioned as the show started, the University of Southern California, USC, had fired head coach Clay Helton. And I told you a couple of candidates, and the one I failed to mention yesterday, now I'm glad it surfaced up, because I remember this when Doug was here, and Jay had, I think on one of those Mouth Off Mondays, had asked us in our top five at five some questions, and one of them was if you were looking to hire someone to make a splash in college. And I said, you know, the guy I'd look at is Eric Bieniemy. He hasn't coached. He's coached in college. He's never been a head coach. Of course, he's the guy that seemingly gets passed over all the time in the NFL, but he's been with the Chiefs. He's been with Andy Reid. You know he knows offense. He's from Los Angeles, played at Colorado. Apparently, league sources believe that Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy will emerge as a head coaching candidate for USC. He is, of course, as I mentioned, from Southern California, and apparently has told people in the past that USC is one of the few college jobs that might interest him. So I think that's a good one to see. USC for now is going to make it through this year with Dante Williams as Clay Helton was let go. And again, just two games into the season. So we'll keep our eye on that. Our daily over-under on KHDK.com. You can go there each and every day and participate. All you have to do is make a vote in our poll question. And our daily over-under poll today, runs batted in for Brandon Crawford today against the Padres. 1.5. Over or under? Right now, I think the votes are coming in for under, but you can, we've got both sides here, 75% under, 25% over, and you can vote there. All you have to do is do that, and then you will automatically enter in a chance to win a $50 gift card to Twin Peaks. And so an opportunity there. We do that each and every week. All right, last night, Monday Night Football. The game was interesting, was compelling, and had a little bit of everything, as we've discussed already. The other part that was talked about a few weeks ago and formally came to fruition last night was the Manning telecast. Eli and Peyton Manning together, and then different guests with them. I was late to the party, didn't watch it until about the fourth quarter and all of overtime. And I think this is going to be something that when they do it, I think they have 10 episodes of this, I'll make it a regular point. I thought it was informative, entertaining, funny at times. At the end, I mean, it was really locked in on football because the game was dictating that. I think they will work out some of the bugs. There was the natural part where they were all in different locations and maybe a talk over someone else or a delay would trigger some uncomfortable, I'm starting, you starting, you go. Because at the end, who I saw, I'd seen part of Travis Kelce with Eli and Peyton. I know that Ray Lewis was with them. I think Charles Barkley, I thought, was with them. I thought I'd seen that. But I saw Russell Wilson primarily. And because Wilson was at home, there was, like I said, a little bit of a delay where there's maybe a question or a thought. There's an opening. And maybe it sounds longer to each of their ears. And then someone would talk and they talk over each other a little bit. But by and large, it was really, really good. And here was some of the dialogue between Peyton and Eli.
Riddell makes precision fit helmets now. They fit for your head specifically. Heads? Yes, for big heads. All right, that's the new thing.
You need some more powder on that forehead. You look like you sprayed Pam all over it.
Okay, here we go. Now it starts, Ray.
Yeah, so they were brothers attacking one another.
That's a total big brother, little brother. Okay.
Yeah, except it was the little brother fighting back there. And then early on, I think it was Peyton may have said this after seeing the Raiders' opening possession.
Tell me everything I need to know.
All right, incomplete. Okay. What does that tell you?
Looking at 6-11. 6-11 right now.
That was after the first play, I think it was. This is going to tell me everything I need to know. The Raiders are going to go 6-11. But here's where, to me, the gem of it was the fact that a lot of people have been caught up in what Tony Romo does, and for the most part, he sees a play before it happens, is able to kind of predict which way it goes, and there's some really good education in that. But to me, in winning time, in that fourth quarter and in overtime, to have Russell Wilson with Eli and Peyton, three quarterbacks, describing what they were looking at, where the checkdown was, their live reactions to mistakes, to penalties, to PIs not called or called, to plays that were called, to that interception, that unthinkable interception the Raiders had at the end. It was awesome. And again, I think they'll work through the bugs. They'll get better at it. But it was a different way. It was fresh. It was different. Maybe over time we'll get tired of this like we get tired of other things. What's the next new thing? But this felt good. It felt that you're tapping into their experience. You're watching them watch the game while the game's going on. I mean, it's another, I guess what we need is more bells and whistles, but it was well done to me. And I think it will only get better. It wasn't one of those like, rough first week, but I'll give it another week. No, I thought it was a good first week, and I think it will get better. I think having the guests are great. I think hearing both Peyton and Eli talk, there was other stuff where there was a deep dive into football where plays were written on the board or actually signals were called out and what those mean. I thought those were interesting, but I wonder if that hits the masses. But I think as they have different guests go through, picking the right guests, getting the right, I mean, the game was fantastic as far as the drama. And like I said, I think the real charm in it to me was they all knew, like, oh, that's a blitz. You know the Ravens are going to blitz. You got it. You know, who's your hot route? Find Waller. They all had different answers. They all had different emotions. It looked like Peyton was getting worn out and nervous for the game. as it was progressing. And then they really took it from the offensive side in a sense that when the Raiders had the ball, they said, all right, here's what we need to do here. And then when the Ravens had the ball, here's what we need to do here. So you felt like they were on each of the opposing offenses all the time, but that's where they've looked at the game from. So I liked it. I will make it a point to watch it again. And I remember one of the first times that ESPN, I think, explored an opportunity like this was years ago when they had one of those mega casts for like a national championship game. And they had like the homer for Clemson, the homer for Alabama or something like that. And then the traditional call. And then they had the one where it was like the house party. And it was Bill Walton, Jay Billis, Michelle Beadle, Jalen Rose. And I'm thinking, who's going to watch that? And sure enough, I turned it on and I couldn't stop watching it. I just didn't think, I don't know about this. That was entertaining to me that night. And you had the game on, you have them watching the game, getting their reaction. Oh, what's Bill Walton eating? Oh, why is Jay Billis doing that? Or they're arguing, he's playing a guitar. What's going on? It was just, that worked then. I think this worked. It was really inside football at times, but also I think tried to hit a broader base. So I think they did a good job.
I think it's interesting, and I wonder how many other broadcasts will be like this, because this is more of a push towards the neutral fan of like,
yeah.
Of course you're going to watch Monday Night Football the first week of that, but what about week 7, two teams that are bottom of the barrel, but like, oh man, I know that Peyton and Eli will have something crazy tonight.
Yeah, and I think too, if it's, you know, oh wow, they have this musician or this actor or this football player, or wow, they've got a baseball player. I just don't know what their different guests will be, what the draw will be, but I think it was a job well done for the first one. All right, let's before we wrap it up, let's get the crossover from the morning show.
What's happening on the Carmichael Dave Show? Let's find out right now with the crossover.
Do you believe it?
Here's today's crossover.
Crossover time. Feel free to go around the room here. Since you got us thinking about candy, here's my question for all of you. Assume that you have the ingredients on hand or the item on hand. What is your favorite go-to no-no midnight or late-night snack? What's your go-to? First-round pick.
I don't have a go-to.
I don't think I do either, because I'm thinking it really depends for me, Chris, on what my if it's calling me, it's my taste buds are going, I want sweet or I want salty.
Yeah.
Generally, so that's salty would be a chip, chip and dip, popcorn, something in that realm. Sweet, generally my house would be ice cream. There's not a one shop, one size fits all there for me.
And if it's late night, it's usually what I've got left over.
That's yeah, so you would eat like another, if you had dinner, it's 11 or 12, you're like, I want a little something else before I go to bed. You would have another part of whatever dinner was.
Like make a sandwich out of what's left over.
Yeah. But there's no one consistent. I mean, really, it's what's your option? What's your choice? And there's been that before you go, we got nothing. And I commit, I'm done. Or it's, you know what? I'm going to make something and then I'll use it for tomorrow.
You like, it's got to be something
quick.
Quick. And I'll take these three things and make something out of it.
Yeah. Because I'm trying to think the last, like last night, for example, I just got a little something else after the game. And we have a jar of mixed nuts. It's not exciting. I'm like, handful of that. But other times it could be, I like sweets. I need a little ice cream, a little chips, something like that. But I don't know. There's nothing consistent. Nothing consistent there for me. Still a work in progress. I had asked him the question in the crossover to them was, speaking of things that are available and around, there was by my office, there was a little trial size, I mean, just mini size thing of Nerds. And I don't know the last time I had Nerds. I'm like, I'm going to have this. And then it got me thinking about Payday, all these weird candy names. So I'd ask them what their candy name would be if they had a candy bar or a candy.
Like a candy that is...
Like they created. The Carmichael Dave candy is what? What's the name of it?
Oh, okay.
Not even what would be in it. What would you name it? Because names are weird for candy bars.
Oh, mine. I know mine.
What's that?
Criss Crunch.
That would work. So it's obviously got some sort of cookie that breaks. It's got a crunch.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I like that. So like sort of like a Twix type of thing.
Yeah, or a Kit Kat, right? There's a little crunch there. Or a, what is the Rice Krispies?
Crunch Bar.
Crunch Bar.
Might get sued.
Yeah, nah, but you put Chris in it. It's completely different. Chris Crunch. I like it. There's a ring to it. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Again, time to see the return of Pro Rodeo to Marysville this Saturday and Sunday. For ticket information, go to MarysvilleStampede.com. A's baseball will be coming up. It's the A's and the Royals coming your way. And as we laid out earlier, this is an important stretch here for the A's. If they have any hope, they'll be keeping their eye on the scoreboard tonight. The Yankees will play in the Orioles. That one's getting started in a few moments. They'll keep their eye on the Blue Jays, who have been crazy hot. They host the Rays. You've also got the Astros at the Rangers. They'll be watching that one. And, of course, they got to take care of their own business. And then later tonight, following them, will be the Red Sox and Mariners. So they need some help. They need to keep winning. It is A's baseball. They take on the Royals. Game one of that three-game set. It is coming your way next, right here on Sports 1140 KHTK. See ya.